plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome back to another week of Cantrip Cartel. Matt is reeling after blowing all of his money at an auction this weekend. He really busted open the bank for a little charity auction we went to. But other than that, I don't know. Anything special happened, Matt? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. So we went to the auction on Saturday. Spent like 8 or 9 hours out in the cold, and I spent $2.
Literally $2.14. We were there for like 8 hours, 7-8 hours, and you spent $2 on a mismatch of old crappy clay pots.
Yep. So that was my auction experience. I had a good time. I got out of there on the cheap, so I was happy with that. I spent more on hamburgers and hot dogs than I did on anything for the auctions.
Yeah, which walking lunch broke the bank for you that day.
Yeah. It was quite chilly. I'm glad I kind of... I didn't think it was going to be even that cold. And part of it, it wasn't like frigid, but we were there for a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad I dressed warm like I did. I wish I would have worn my actual coat instead of just my like Carhartt sweater. Yeah, it was fun. Had a good time. Yeah. Other than that, I finished Unicorn Overlord and immediately restarted because it's just the most fun video game I've played in a long time. I started it on the second, so I'm sure I brought this up, but like I started the demo on story mode just to figure out the game and didn't realize you couldn't change it. So I beat the game the first time on story mode. Super easy. It was fun. Like once I figured out the game, it was super easy. There was a couple things I needed to figure out. After that, it was just smooth sailing the rest of the game. Like just flat out curb stomped it. Final boss was like, they did do something I didn't really like with the final boss, and it wasn't a big deal, but like, spoiler alert for anybody who plays or is going to play it. So if you don't want to hear anything about the end, now's the time. Skip ahead. But I was fighting, you fight the final boss, and I won't get into story stuff, but like you basically had to fight through a bunch of enemies, right? Uh-huh. And then right when you think you're going to go kill the boss, he goes, ha, 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 and he turns all your units against you. And then you have to, you can either just rush the boss, or what you're supposed to do is go around and use the like ring you inherited from your parents. That's kind of like your signet ring. You know, denotes your part of royalty. You go around, and that ring can like cure people of the curse, because that's basically what had happened. So the bad guy was able to. That's how he took over most of the continent. Is he goes to a place, effectively mind controls the person in charge there, and then can take it over with very little fight. Well, he does that at the final fight with every troop or every like. Battle unit that you've deployed onto the field, he takes them all over, and he can run up to him and use that ring and cure him of it. The problem is if you fight him, you are actually fighting them and you kill them. So
yeah,
like they're not permadead, but they're done for that battle. And I didn't quite think this through, and I wasn't sure if it would work or not, but I've got a move called teleport, where I can teleport to any like anywhere on the map that's either controlled by my team or one of my units. I can teleport directly to them. Well, you teleport like literally on top of them. So I was like, oh, well, I'll just teleport over there and then cure them with the ring. Nope. As soon as you touch them, it starts the battle and there's no backing out. You can't do anything else.
You have to kill them.
Yeah, so I teleported in, just fucking raffle stomped one of my own party members and went, oh, well, I'm not gonna fucking deal with this. So I just like rushed the boss and killed him. And so like I got through it, it was fine, but I really don't like losing control of my characters and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's great design. There's plenty of fighting before and after that, but I was like, eh, whatever. And to be fair, they do like, it's set up throughout the entire story that this is what this guy can do. But it never happens up until that point. And I just felt like it came out of left field. But it didn't matter. I expect it will be much more difficult on, Except I'm playing on the second hardest difficulty, so I expect it'll be much more difficult on that. The game is quite fun on now that I had to actually think things through. One of the things that changed fun, the biggest change so far is the level difference in enemies really matters, whereas before it wasn't that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. I was running into a couple issues doing some of the liberation missions and whatnot, where there was one where there's shaman, which I think I talked about, but shaman debuffs its opponents, and it does it by a percentage, so it can like a shaman with an offensive curse can just nuke your offensive abilities, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it was this one shaman and then three I think they're called gladiators, and they just have a ton of HP, and every time you hit them they heal, and so I was five or six levels beneath them and trying to fight them, and I literally couldn't kill them. They couldn't kill me. They couldn't do anything to me.
But I couldn't kill them.
And that is the objective. I can't take this town without killing the unit that's sitting on the command post.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, fuck. So I went around. I did, there's pretty much designed for you to grind at, where you go and you fight within the context of the story. You have a shaman that can activate these sigils that turns on. It's not a random battle, but it's got it's just like a side mission that you can replay. And you're fighting ghosts. That's what the story is saying. She can commune with spirits, so you're fighting. That's how they kind of make it so you're not just murdering people. And so I just did that to level up and just got everybody up to where they should be. Because one of the things that one of the ways they increase the difficulty, which I'm fine with, but it took some getting used to, is there's just a lot more enemies to fight. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that the game forces you to use multiple units is each unit has stamina. So it can only fight four or five fights before it can no longer move. And then you have to rest. And if you get attacked while you're resting, you're in deep shit. If you're out of stamina, you're just sitting still. You still fight at full capacity, but you just can't move. So you can actually use that to your advantage in some ways. It's never to your advantage to be out of stamina, but you can sprint up to a place and bottleneck them. And if there's a natural choke point, you can just pop one guy there and it doesn't matter that he can't move, as long as he can just, weather the waves of enemies coming through. He can just sit there and kill them one by one and his stamina doesn't matter. There's so many more enemies, you actually do have to just you have to deploy multiple troops, because there's enemies, frequently the way I would play it in story mode would be I drop three guys, and in general, most maps, there'd be two to three directions you need to go in. And I just put one, I'd pick the best unit for each direction and just go get them.
Yep.
And that's not enough. They'll be hey, there's five enemies on each one before you even get to a command post. And that's the way that's one of the ways you can naturally recur your stamina, is when you take command posts, which are the places that spawn enemies, you get some stamina back. You get a small heal and you get stamina back. You usually get two or three stamina. So you take it, you get your stamina, and then you can keep pushing. You can also then use those command posts to deploy more enemies out of, because you basically start with your command post that's as far away as it can be from the main objective. And then you obviously push toward the main objective, capturing command posts on the way, and then you can deploy your units from there, and then they don't have to march the whole way back. The added difficulty, the individual units are stronger. There's way more of them, so the game's just fun. It added what it needed to add. By the time I beat it on story mode, I was just barely paying attention to what I was doing, because it was awesome being super powerful, but I was just curb stomping everything. So there wasn't a whole lot of thought going into it. I'm just moving from battle to battle because I wanted to see how the story played out. To be fair, it was story mode and it worked well for that. This time though, I get to basically skip all the story because I already know it. And while I like it, I already know it and I'm more interested in the gameplay. And I just get to fine tune my units. They also did, this was something I wasn't expecting, and I don't know if it was just that I didn't notice or I'm misremembering, but I think they changed the gear that's for sale in the shops. And
Like, they tune it down, so it's not as
good? I can't even tell. Like, there's some stuff in there that, like, I don't know if I just didn't notice it the first time because I didn't recognize what it was. But, like, there's some stuff in there that I didn't have access to, and this is all pretty early on in the game, until, mm-hmm. like, two or three, like, basically nation states later. And I was like, I wonder if they kind of, like, tweak what gear you have access to. Because, like, I mean, almost right away. So there's one of the primary ways you customize your characters is with accessories. And one that I found is really good, and it's pretty much obvious why. You get two accessories. You can have up to two accessory slots, maybe a third, depending on the character, and then a weapon. Mm-hmm. Some characters have shields, and those take up an accessory slot. And they can't put an accessory slot in a shield slot. So, like, one of the best pieces of gear I found is just, now, aside from doing, like, wacky combos, but just as far as the stat boost goes, their eye patches. There's one, the first one's Mercenary's eye patch, increases your chance to crit by 20%. Then there's the Veteran's, which is 30%. That's kind of like my bread and butter, because critting in this mm-hmm. game's really good. The one that I didn't even know existed until I got to the Colosseum, which is probably 35% of the way through the game, if you're playing it normally, is mm-hmm. then it's like the Warrior's Medallion, and then there's several other medallions, but it's like 10% chance to crit, 10% physical attack, and a flat amount of attack. So, like, that's pretty solid, because, like, mm-hmm. you can't, so here's the thing, you can't equip the same thing twice. So you can have one Mercenary's eye patch. That's the most crit you can get at that point in the game, right? Well, the next one is, here's the, you know, the Warrior's Medallion, which is 10% chance to crit and 10% physical attack. So, like, that's yep. pretty solid, too. Well, I didn't get, like, those are just for sale. Now, there's not a ton of them, because that's one of the things they do with the shops, is, like, you'll go to a shop and it'll have, like, one Warrior's Medallion for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs, like, 10,000, where, like, everything else costs, like, one or 2,000. So, like, but those just weren't there on story mode. And I don't know if I just, like I said, I don't know if I just didn't see them or what, but there's, like, several instances of that where it's like, yeah, well, they kind of tweak things too. So it's interesting. It's a lot of fun. I think I played it for, like, so we hang out on, I think I put another, like, 8 or 9 hours on Sun. Like, it's just the type of game where I start playing it and time just evaporates. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, oh, fuck, it's 10 o'clock. Because, like, I just keep playing it. It's just a hell of a lot of fun. So, I don't know. That's basically what I've been doing. I've been keeping up on pre-modern, but it doesn't look like there's been any, like, major events or anything going on. We didn't hang out at all, 2 weekends ago, which is normally when we play pre-modern. And then this past Saturday, we were at the auction, so didn't play any then either. So we don't really have a whole lot to report on that front either. So that's pretty much all I've got. I've got some Call of the Herds that I talked about that I think I talked about on our last episode, which was 2 weeks ago, and I still haven't got them. So, yay. Cool. Of course. TCG.
Oh, remember?
But whatever.
Remember when I told you that I ordered foils and they never showed up and I was bummed out? Because they're like, uh-huh. like $2 or $3 a card. So they were supposed to be here by the 21st, and I uh-huh. was like, I kept being like, oh, I need to go and, like, request a refund, because it was like the 22nd, 23rd, and they never showed up, so I just need to go do that. I never got around to it, and they showed up on, like, the 24th. So that dude almost gave me cards for free.
Yep.
But now that I've received them, I can't in good conscience request a refund.
And you shouldn't. You shouldn't, like, steal from people or whatever.
It did take, but, like, a month to get them, though.
Yeah. And that's like, ridiculous. Yeah. Especially given the fact that you're paying for shipping.
I know. Yeah, I paid for the plain white envelope they came in, and it took a month to get here. But I guess he was shipping them from Alaska, maybe. Who knows? I didn't look at the return address.
To be fair, some of that isn't even necessarily on the shipper. So when I was ordering all those cards, I got some from a TCG player, and, like, the guy had shipped it out the day, like, basically that day or the day after,
mm-hmm.
and, like, it had the stamp from, like, it was in the post office hands, like, 2 days after I ordered it, and it took them 20 days to get it to my house.
Jesus Christ.
Like, it's just, I don't know exactly how it works, but this is kind of, you and I both have experience with FedEx, and they don't work this way, but mm-hmm. I think what happens with the post office is if it's not, like, if it's just, like, the regular basic bitch mailing, it just gets there when it gets there, and like they will put stuff on a truck before, like, I think it goes on empty trucks. That's kind of what I imagine. Is that kind of stuff, like, it's like, when we don't have anything else going on, then we'll handle this. But if you want to actually pay us to get something somewhere, like, that's when it's going to take, like, you know, 3 to 5 days or a week or something like that. If you just want to chuck it in the fucking, put a stamp or two on it and throw it in the mailbox, it could take anywhere between 2 days and a month. And it's just however long it takes. So that's my theory. It's probably something like that, because it's pretty consistent. That, like, because the post office, if you just pay them, they get stuff there on time.
Yeah, you can get, like, if you use 2 day, 3 day, 1 day.
Yeah, and like when I order from Cool Stuff Inc., I think they have like $2 shipping. They bump their shipping up $1. Not that it really matters, but just in case anybody cares. And like, it's not like priority, but it's like not just a plain white envelope. And it they get here in like 3 to 5 days. It's the post office. If you get the free shipping, it's actually priority, and it's here, like, real fucking quick.
Yeah, you can get that stuff.
So they're perfectly capable of shipping. Yeah. But if you just want to put a stamp on something, they don't give a fuck about your package.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, if you want to order cards for a tournament or whatever, it's like, well, you need to be prepared 6 months in advance for that tournament, because your shit will not show up.
And that's one of the problems is, like, as far as I know, you don't even get an option. Like, if you're just ordering from... Like, I think on TCG Direct you might, but, like, maybe. If you just order from some dude, they just charge you the dollar or two shipping, and I don't think they give you the opportunity to be like, no, I need this in 2 days.
Yeah. Like, or even, how about in a week? I need it in a week.
Yeah.
Is it too much to add? Like, I just need it in the next 7 days, bud. Can you please get it here?
Yeah. Because a lot of people, including myself, would frequently, like, most of the time, that kind of stuff doesn't matter, but, like... I'd pay $5 to just have it here.
Oh, yeah. Like, it happens all the time.
I'm not
going to
do that on, like, go ahead.
Well, like, if we're, like, prepping for a tournament, if there's an event coming up, or, you know, hey, there's, you know, next week is the Sage Shop Store Championship, and I got some really cool tech and I want to try out. I think it'd be a fun sideboard couple cards. Well, I can't, because they won't be here in time. So it doesn't matter. Unless I want to drive to a different town to get to see if the card shop has them, I can't.
Yep.
It's it's super frustrating. But the deck is, the Stasis deck is together now. I've been kind of tinkering with the main board a little bit. And I do look forward to coming over next weekend and hopefully playing it out some. But no, it took a few weeks off. I found a couple fun things at the auction. I found basically some old junky tools. Like, so I bought an air compressor for like $20. It doesn't work, which is pretty normal. The air ratchet I bought, which I was really excited about, it wasn't working. And I pulled it apart and was able to fix the part that was stuck, but then while reassembling it, broke it more thoroughly. So it's the parts that it needs, I could order. I found like a comparable part for like $20, but I don't know if they're universal. I don't know if they're all the same size, because there's no name on it. It's just a no-name ratchet. So like I can't even find the brand and like try and narrow down where it's from. So. Unless I can find some kind of universal kit, it's probably trash, which is fine. It was fun taking it apart and fussing with it. I did get a really fun project to take apart. So I found like a really, really well-built or really big, heavy grinder base that's got two great big stone grinders on it and a huge electric motor that may or may not be burned out. But between that and something else I bought that has, it was an old shitty drill press that like half the drill press is gone, but the electric motor was still there. I'm looking forward to, like, I'm going to take the whole thing apart. And actually, I already have taken it apart. It was a huge pain in the ass. Clean it up, grind it down, smooth it out, repaint it, and reassemble it and try and get it working again and have just a huge monster of a grinder to use. But that's going to be my little, like, ongoing project for the next probably week or two or a couple weeks. Hopefully we can get something that looks good. And if I do get a good-looking product, I'll put it up on the Patreon or the Patreon on the Discord people to see. The other thing I've been doing, so I haven't been playing much like Tarkov Arena, I haven't been playing much Dark Souls. I did re-download Elden Ring, because in a few months there's a big DLC coming out everyone's excited about, and I was able to recover my save file, which is awesome, because I don't really want to play Elden Ring again from level zero. I like playing a strength build, and strength builds are hard, and I don't want to grind back up to level 180 or 200 or whatever I am, I'll just play the DLC on New Game Plus, and like everything will be harder, but that's okay. I've got the swords I want. I've got the armor I want. I'm a badass. What I have been doing, though, is I dipped my toe into emulating because I decided, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, I decided I wanted to play Pokemon again. And about once every, 3 to 7 years, I want to play Pokemon. And the options are always buy a new or newish style handheld and the new Pokemon, or buy an old used handheld and an old Pokemon cartridge. And I mean, it's usually like minimum $120 to find like an old working Game Boy SP and an old working Game Boy SP cartridge for like Pokemon Sapphire or Pokemon whatever it'd be. So I finally have gotten tired of doing that. And so I looked into getting some of those like emulator, like it looks like a Game Boy looking little emulator box. And then you put an SD card in it with a bunch of ROMs in it. And so I found a well-reviewed one. I ordered it, waited for like 2 or 3 weeks for it to come in. I was going to just use it out of the box, but then after doing some research, and I'd kind of thought about getting into like actually putting my own emulators on there instead of just taking whatever China sends me. The internet was pretty clear that, like, the SD card that it comes with is hot garbage. The ROMs that it comes with are hot garbage. Like, it's worth the effort to buy a new SD card, download a new operating system onto it, and download a whole new set of games. And so I kind of dipped my toe into figuring that out. It is really simple in that, like, the community has made it pretty easy. The people who know what they're doing, like, have curated these huge lists. They've created operating systems, and they've created lists that work with the operating systems, and moving the files around is really easy. But after, you know, a couple weeks of waiting, after several hours of downloading files and hoping I don't have any viruses on my computer and moving things around and getting things to sync up and getting image files moved over, I've got my little Game Boy Advance looking thing. Or no, it's a Game Boy Color looking thing. I've got about 3,000 games on it, which is, I think I have about 2,000 games on it, which is about 1,997 games more than I need, because I have all the Pokemon I want to play. So all I've been doing for the last week and a half is putting, like, I think I put, like, 40 hours into Pokemon Sapphire, like, the original Sapphire, and I had so much fun playing it, and I ended up beating it last night, because I had a bunch of time to kill at work. I never have free time on Mondays, because when I go to work on Mondays, most of the week I'm feeding. My job is to feed the cows, mix the feed, and then go around and fix piddly shit and whatnot. Well, on Mondays, I'm almost always either working the front milking in the parlor, hooking the machines up to the cows, or I'm working the back milking, which is cleaning the pens and moving the cows around. And that those, like, there's no free time in those jobs. I mean, like, you could stop and, like, answer a text or chill for a little bit. There's no, like, take a 10-minute breather. Whereas feeding, I've gotten a pretty good rhythm to it. And I can easily take a couple, like, I'll go to the bathroom, or I'll just sit down and take a 10-minute breather and chill for a little bit because I got time. You know, we're not fighting for minutes on this. But when you're working in the parlor, like, there's always someone waiting on you. Either the back milker's waiting on you or the front milker's waiting on you. Like, there's always stuff to be done. But for whatever reason, I threw it in my truck anyway. And as we were wrapping up that night, and I sent, we have a part-time worker that works Mondays. And so I sent her home at like 9:45, 9:50, which is an hour late anyway. Because every day we milk twice. And every time we milk, the parlor needs to be cleaned inside and out. So we clean the outside, we wash it, scrub it, wash it again, you know, try and make sure it's nice, as clean as possible. And then the system has a wash function you run it through where it cleans all the pipes. It runs hot, soapy water through it, you know, it pre-mixes its own soap. It runs hot, soapy water, cold water, rinses it multiple times, sterilizes it, does all that. Well, whoever worked in the morning couldn't be bothered to set the parlor up correctly, so it didn't wash. So
nice.
When we got there, and I assumed some responsibility for it because I was basically the manager, I checked the parlor room, or the bulk tank room, where everything, all the machinery is. And I just didn't notice the piping that didn't get set up correctly. Otherwise, I could have started the wash while we were working on other things, but I didn't. So we started about an hour late, where we just had to sit around and wait for 45 minutes or an hour for the wash to finish. So we already finished an hour late. So I send her home. I'm doing my final walkthrough, because I always I'm one of the few managers that actually does a final walkthrough of the farm. I go through every building. I check all the lights. I check all the cows. I check everything. And as I was walking through our pre-fresh area, which are the cows that are going to give birth any day now, we check them like 5 times a day for babies. I find a cow who's very clearly in labor. And like she doesn't have a baby sticking out yet, but like she's pretty clearly in labor. And I've never been alone for this. I actually never even seen a cow give birth. I've taken care of many of the babies afterwards, and I've found several babies, but I've never been like the only one there. So I text my boss and I was like, "Hey, is this the process?" And he said, "Yep, you're good." And I said, "Cool. How long does like cow labor normally last? Like at what point should I leave if nothing's happening?" And he said, "It usually lasts around an hour or less. And once you start seeing hooves, once their legs start sticking out, they're usually within like 30 minutes of giving birth. They'll be on the ground in the next 20, 30 minutes. And one of the reasons it's important, if you can, to catch it as soon as possible, you know, we want to make sure and get the baby's vaccinations and make sure it's healthy and get it dried off. And you dip its umbilical cord to make sure it dies correctly. And you also want to make sure and give it colostrum as soon as possible. Colostrum is like super duper mega milk that the mom produces right away. And we always keep a bunch extra. So like when that mom gives birth, I'm not going to sit there with a bucket and milk her colostrum out. We'll milk her the next time we have the parlor running. But that baby needs colostrum as soon as possible. So we go to the freezer, we get 2 jugs out, we thaw them out, get them nice and hot, and then we'll feed the baby. And the sooner the baby gets colostrum, the better for it. So I waited around until 12:30 and said, fuck it, and left. But I took care of the barn. I brought her in because pre-fresh is like an outside pen. I brought her in and put her in a stall so everything would be easier. She's right next to the vet room where all the drugs are. And I got everything wrapped up. I went and got dinner because I knew I was going to be there. I mean, when the baby drops, like I'm going to be there for another 35 to 40 minutes minimum between getting all the stuff done. And then I sat down with my Game Boy and I checked on her every 30 minutes until midnight. And I was like, all right, bitch, you got one more. And if there's no legs or anything poking out, I'm out of here. And there wasn't. I did manage to beat the final four and beat the game, which is pretty awesome. But so I text the guys that are working there today. And I said, did that cow give birth last night? Because I'm pretty sure she's in labor, but I'm not 100% positive. And like, I'm kind of curious if I was right. And he texted me back and he's like, yep, when we got there, she had a baby with her. And I was like, that bitch. I left at 12:30. They show up at 4. I waited with her for 2.5 hours. And in the 2.5, 3 hours when no one was there, she gave birth. And I wasn't like sitting there staring at her. Like I said, I'd come in, I'd look at her, and I'd walk right back out. I'd just walk into the aisleway, look at her, and walk away. So I wasn't like hovering over her. Yeah, mm-hmm. She purposely made me wait there longer. The guy I was talking to thinks she gave birth probably around 2:30 or 3 in the morning. So good thing I didn't wait.
Yeah, fuck that.
Something I noticed this time while playing Sapphire, which I had tons of fun. I love playing the original style of Pokemon games. And I mean, that would extend all the way to like, you know, Pearl and Diamond and what's the new ones? X and Y.
Oh, those are X and Y are even old. They're fucking, I don't even know what they're called on Switch now.
But well, like, at least I like the traditional style. I mean, yeah. And there's been some redoing of it, I'm sure. And the new games are a little different here and there, but just the basic style of like, hey, here's your starter Pokemon, go away, beat Team Rocket or whatever they're called now, and then beat the Final Four. So I normally, I play Pokemon like I play RPGs. I play strength builds in that if the attack doesn't do damage, my Pokemon doesn't have it. Okay. I don't do any of this like stun, poison powder, you know, attack up, defense up. If it doesn't hurt the other Pokemon, I don't use it. And I normally take my starter Pokemon and I put him in front. And he, by the end of the game, he's level like 70, and he carries me through the final four, and he does everything. Mm-hmm. This time, I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have a balanced team. I tried to pay attention to team composition, and I had like a grass type, and a fire type, and a steel type, and a flying type. I tried a broad composition, and I put a lot of effort into moving them around and keeping them all roughly the same level. Which, you know, was usually a bit higher than wherever I was, but, you know, like, they're all level 15. Okay, now they're all level 20 or 25. Now they're all level 30 or 35. And I did that, and I went through the game. I caught the Kyogre or whatever the big bad Pokemon it is, and I got to Victory Road. I started moving through, and I was getting my ass kicked. I was quite a bit under-leveled to like everyone there, and I don't know why, because I played the entire game and I did several grinding sessions where I just sat in an area with moderately high level Pokemon and just grinded on random encounters and just leveling my Pokemon up. And I get that, like, I mean, I'm balancing my team out, but I was at the point where, like, fighting Pokemon, it takes like 10, 12, 20 fights to level up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty high level compared to what's around, and most of the areas, at least on this one, before the final four are all like ocean. So there's not.
Mm-hmm.
So one, half the encounters are a level 13 Tentacruel, which is a waste of my time to fight. And two, I have several Pokemon that can't really effectively fight a water type Pokemon. Like, mm-hmm. they're just hard countered by it. So like, I don't know what happened that it was, I was so, I mean, I got to where I could basically win. I got to where I could defeat one or two of the starter Pokemon for the final four first guy, and that's obviously a ton of experience. And so I started just running in and doing that over and over and over and over.
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
And eventually got, I mean, I started doing it when I, like, my Pokemon were like level between like 32 to 36, and by the time I finished it, most of them were level 50. I think my starter Pokemon, because he was the most powerful, and he ended up, what's funny is he ended up fucking carrying me through. I picked Torchic.
Yep.
I named him Dresden, and then he eventually evolved into Blaziken, which is a tall, skinny guy that likes fire.
Nice.
And as I was going through, like, his moves just owned, like, the first guy. He could just completely TKO the first guy. And so I would use him, and then XP shared on my other guys. So he obviously accelerated quite a bit. And then it got to the next guy, where it turns out he also did a decent job at fighting the ghost-type Pokemon, because his fighting moves were powerful enough to power through them. Or it wasn't his fighting mm-hmm. moves, but he had a couple. His Blaze Kick could one-shot most of them. But so, like, by the end of it, everyone's, like, level 45, 50, and he's, like, level 59, 65, something like that. And he killed pretty much everybody. He still just ended up carrying me through. So there's all this effort I put into having a balanced team composition and a nice, smooth, you know, level playing field. No, it didn't fucking matter. I just used Blaziken and killed everybody again. It's a waste of my fucking time. So now I'm...
It's all about the journey, Jake.
That's what, yeah.
I mean, watch the show. It's all about the journey and the friends you make along the way.
Uh-huh. So I'm deciding if I want to... I basically bumped back to Crystal version. I'm going to do Crystal, and then I think I might do, like, Fire Red, or might do, like, actual OG Red.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm debating trying a Nuzlocke run on Sapphire. I don't know if Nuzlocke is hard enough that I'm too stupid to be able to do it.
I don't know what Nuzlocke is.
So a Nuzlocke run is a specific rule set you implement to a Pokemon game. I don't think it involves any randomizers. There's thousands of different ways to play Pokemon. People have made all kinds of fun rules. Nuzlocke is... The two primary rules I know of are, one, you can only catch the first Pokemon you find on every route. So you can't, like, hunt in an area. Oh, I want an Abra. You can't just keep going and going and going until you find one. Whatever you bump mm-hmm. into first on Route 34, that's what you catch. You have to nickname all of your Pokemon. And then if they faint, they're dead. They have permadeath.
Gotcha.
So you can lock yourself out of a Nuzlocke. All your Pokemon can die and you can't play anymore. And so, like, I kind of want to try to do a Nuzlocke and see just how impossible it is, because I like playing Pokemon and I've played a lot of them, but I don't have, like, a great firm grasp on, like, the core,
all the mechanics and everything,
the mechanics and the principles of Pokemon. And, like, I understand how a lot of the basic types interact, but I don't know the complex stuff. I don't know what moves are actually secretly good. I don't know how to, like, break the system and make it so that, you know, I'm actually, like, stacking damage in crazy ways. But I also, after playing the first, like, 3 or 4 hours of Crystal, which is Generation 2, I believe, I'm already enjoying it less, because it's a lot of the creature comforts from Generation 3 are already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just annoying enough playing that one older that I really don't want to go back and play, like, Red or Green or Red or Blue or Yellow. Because those are, like, the first ones, and there's obviously tons of annoying stuff in that one. And I kind of want to just play Sapphire again, but I don't think I want to just, like, do a new game and just redo, like, I just did it. Well, I'll just do that again. So I'm trying to think of ways to like make it more interesting and do something different. And I need to look up and see if there's like a step between a regular playthrough and a Nuzlocke, because Nuzlocks are pretty hard and you can very easily get like, you know, 20 hours in and just like, hey, you lose your starter Pokemon and you're not fucked, but you just lost a lot of work.
Yeah.
Because like, I mean,
you can't there's only so many Pokemon you can catch.
Yeah,
if you're literally limiting yourself to the first one.
And you could easily just get fucked over by catching a couple crappy Pokemon, and you're just fucked. So I'm debating finding ways to enjoy it more, or I'm debating looking, because I'm pretty sure, I can't remember if Sapphire was Game Boy Advanced. If I look on my emulator, it'll tell me, or if it was Game Boy SP.
I think the SP is Game Boy Advanced. It's just... It's kind of like the Game Boy Advance Pro. It's like just a better Game Boy, but it's the same platform.
Which one had two? Which one had like the bottom port and the top port? Was it like the SD or was it 3DS?
The like big foldable one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a 3DS.
Because there was that had the small like they had like SD cartridges in the bottom and then Game Boy Advance cartridges in the top, right?
I don't remember as far as the cartridges go. But it had two screens, like one with a, you had like a stylus that you could like interact with, and then the obviously the 3D part of the 3DS. But the 2DS also had two screens. It was that's again the same platform. So like there's Game Boy Advanced, and then the DS and the 3DS. So like Game Boy Advance started with the like the rectangular shaped one, and then the SP is the folder, the one that looks like a flip phone, like a smartphone that you could fold in half. It actually looks very similar to what you have. That's the SP, but the Advance and the SP are the same system. So for Game Boy Advance, you've got Sapphire, Emerald, Leaf Green. I believe it also has the like Ruby. You might try. Apparently, Emerald is like a compilation or something. Like it's like a remix. I never played a lot of these.
So sorry for the brief cut here. We had technical difficulty where my recording stopped. Luckily, it saved it. But what you were explaining? What were you just explaining?
So there's the different versions of Pokemon for the Game Boy Advance. So there's Sapphire, Emerald, Leaf Green. Looks like probably Fire Red.
So I always thought that like Leaf Green and Fire Red were basically like remakes of Green and Red and like in color. Is that not what they are?
I don't know. I haven't played them. My Pokemon experience went blue, yellow, X and Y.
Gotcha.
I haven't played
just jumped 20 years.
Yeah, I didn't play any in between.
Okay. Because yeah, I know I played yellow. I think I played red. I know I played either Fire Red or Leaf Green, one of the two. And then I know I played Sapphire. And then I think I didn't play anything until Diamond.
Okay, so...
And I think I got a 3DS for Diamond.
So Leaf Green it's the same story and everything that is Red, Blue, and Yellow, the original versions. But it's got a bunch of new Pokemon in it. So there's 386 Pokemon in it as opposed to 151.
So it has generation. So that's Gen 2.
Yeah. So it's basically that, but it's got like a bunch of like probably quality of life improvements.
Yes.
So like it'd be like for somebody like you or that didn't want to go all the way back and play it in black and white and shit like that, Leaf Green would probably be a much better approach to playing the originals.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It'd at least be like a way like to meet in the middle. Like if you're like, well, I'm going to try Leaf Green, and if I like this, maybe I'll try Red and Blue.
I'll try Green. Yeah.
But...
So, I have learned while doing this that it is really fucking difficult to Google questions about Pokemon because there's so many Pokemon, like evolution trees or obviously like the core fundamentals are the same, but like where items are, it's really hard to find. Case in point. So, Sapphire and Ruby. There's like Alpha Sapphire and Omega Ruby, which are remakes of Sapphire and Ruby. It makes them like the overworld is like 3DS or not 3D, it's like 3D. It looks a lot better, and there's actually new Pokemon in it because it has like generation 4 Pokemon. So because like I was playing and I captured a Rosalia, which is like a little girl with like roses for hands, and that was my leaf type Pokemon, and I vividly remember that Pokemon evolved, and I was I kind of set a rule for myself that I wasn't going to look up evolution levels because it was way more climactic to be like, oh, is it this one?
Yeah, when you just fight this, then he's just like, oh my god!
It's yeah, funny. It gets like, because like, I know Torchic's going to evolve somewhere between like 12 and 18, but every level between there is really climactic and whatnot. And so I was doing that with Rosalia, and I got her to like level 36, and I was like, okay, I give up. At what fucking point does this bitch evolve?
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't in Sapphire. In Gen 3, she doesn't. They didn't add her evolution until Gen 4. But here's the thing. When I Googled Rosalia evolution Sapphire, what comes up is that she does evolve. You just have to get a shiny stone from Route 210, whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. I'll go do that. And so I start looking up like where it is. And I go to 210 and I cannot find it anywhere. So I look up like a walkthrough, a video, and it's on the Omega version, but the map is identical. And I actually had just been there. I recognized exactly where she went. I went over there and it wasn't there. And after doing some more digging, I found like a Reddit thread where someone was asking, and the top comment was, she doesn't, that's a Gen 4 thing, and Sapphire's Gen 3.
You just played Sapphire, right? Just to be clear.
I just played Sapphire. Yes, OG Sapphire. But because it's hard to Google things for Pokemon Sapphire, because every time you Google it, it's going to pull up Omega Sapphire, whichever one is the new one, because that's what more people have played, and that's what most of the content is made on. It's hard to find information like, hey, where is this? There was a lot of things, like I don't read text, and having a fast forward button on my little emulator makes it way easier to not read text.
Sure does.
And I got kind of soft locked a few times where I was like, I don't know where to go, and I don't fucking know what to do. And so I had to look up a couple times, like, hey, after this, what do I do? And for perspective, just because I don't like talking to people, I don't like go to town and talk to every single fucking person. I got like halfway through the game and never got cut. Because I didn't know who gave it, and
did
I
you
just
not
went
get
right
it until you
town.
Literally got stuck from not having cut.
No, I was backtracking.
Gotcha.
And I had gotten to several areas where I couldn't go through, and they were all optional areas. But like, I got to enough of them where I was like, "What the fuck is going on?" Because like the first couple are gimmies where it's like, "Yeah, hey, come back to this area when you have cut, and you can get in this little secondary area." But it happened enough times, like after like the 10th area I've found where I should be able to cut a tree down and get through, I was like, I think I missed something. And while backtracking to find out where I needed to go, I found cut. Probably the most hilarious fuck up I did in the whole playthrough, in my opinion, was at some point you go to the top of a mountain, and in Sapphire you're fighting Team Aqua, and at the top of this mountain you fight the boss, and he's guarding some machine that is like gonna shut off the volcano of this mountain or whatever, I don't know. And so you defeat him, and I left, and I don't know what to do next. And both of these things that got me soft locked occurred at the same time, where one, you are supposed to pick up the orb out of the machine before you leave, which I'm sure he said to do, and I didn't. So I had to backtrack across, and keep in mind, I don't have fly at this point, so I had to backtrack across the entire map to get back to the top of the mountain to then collect the item. Then after that, I spent another 40 minutes just wandering around having no idea where to go. I'm sure someone said at some point, hey, now you're ready to go back to Petalburg Gym and fight your dad. Which is the town right next to the starting town, which I did not go back to because how the fuck is my next town right
the
next to home?
Town. Yep.
So I got sort of soft locked for like an hour and a half on both of those things, and that was pretty funny. That's it's already happened again in Pokemon Crystal, where so the cool thing about Crystal is the fast forward is way faster. And I'm guessing that's because in Crystal, there's no run button, whereas in Sapphire, you hold B, or the bottom one, whichever it is, and you run. When you're outside, you don't need a bicycle to go fast. The bicycle is a lot faster, obviously, but you can just run, so you can kind of sprint through. And I'm guessing that the fast-forward speed of the emulator is kind of set off of that run, so that when you're outside and you're running, you're moving pretty quick. You're moving fast enough that it's a little easy to like miss turns. Well, in Crystal, since there is no run button, the fast forward is fast as fuck. So that when you're playing, like when you're fighting, you I just hold fast forward, obviously, right? And I just, like, spam, like, attack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It happens multiple times where, like, I don't know what happened, but my Pokemon's dead now. Because we just ran through, like, three rounds of combat in, like, a second and a half, and now my Pokemon's dead.
Yep.
Because it just fucking... And so I went to... I got to an area, and in this area, the gym... Oh, also, what's a fun thing about Crystal? Because in Sapphire, you can't name your... One, you can't name your opponent. You don't, like, have, like, a... like, you know, it's not like you're fighting against, you know, your neighbor or whatever, or, you know what I'm talking about. Like, mm-hmm. In Fire... Or in Red, you're fighting against Oak's grandson, and he's an asshole. You name him, and that's who you beat at the final four.
Yep.
Well, in Sapphire, he's actually your buddy. He's a cool kid. He's a nice guy, because I guess by then we couldn't have our main antagonist be a mean guy. And you can't name him. And I was kind of bummed out by that. When you get to the end of Sapphire, I guess spoilers for a 25-year-old game, you fight like some random kind of like. Aloof Stony Stark kind of dude that you've bumped into several times throughout the game, and if you beat him, you win. In Crystal, you can name your opponent, so I named him Ass, and it makes me smile every single time when it's like Ass sent out Cyndaquil. Everyone's done it before playing Pokemon, but I have never gone the petty stupid route, and it's just, it makes me smile every time she comes in or he comes in and starts talking shit at me or yelling at me, and like, it's
just like you're an ass.
You bumped into a ass. I love it. But so like I get to town and he says, oh, the gym leader's not here. They're up in the lighthouse. So I go to the top of the lighthouse and I fight my way up and I talk to them. And I kind of accidentally still had the trigger held down. And the gym leader went through probably 7 text bubbles. And at the end of it is like, I need that medicine for this Pokemon, and I'm not going to leave until he's feeling better. And I was like, oh boy, I'll bet she told me where to go get that medicine. And I have no fucking clue where it is. I have wandered all around town. There is no more forward. This is one of those where like the way there's the way back and there's the way forward, which is water. I have no fucking clue where to go. I have no fucking clue where this is. And I guarantee she told me. So I'm going to have to be going back to the internet to find out where I need to go. But yeah, that was... It doesn't happen very often. Like, I'll be grinding. Because, like, grinding's way more efficient. Just, like, wandering around and, like, fighting random battles.
Mm-hmm.
Because the battle takes a second between, like, all the animations loading in. Pokemon goes out. They fight. You win. Cool. Run. And sometimes you die, and that's whatever. I got a bunch of other. I'll just kill the Pokemon and go back and heal up. But that was one of the first time where I was like, I rushed through all that text, and I was like, oh, fuck. That probably all wasn't fluff.
Yep. I've been there
multiple so times. I will have to figure that out. But I've been, like I said, it's funny to me that like I made this huge jump from like Tarkov Arena, which is this competitive, grueling, difficult shooter, like just trying to hold angles and fight people and be tactical, and then I went to like fucking Cyndaquil, go.
Yep.
Use Rock Smash.
So.
Oh, but
you might want to check out Emerald if you haven't played that. So I'm just reading a brief description here, and it looks like
Isn't Emerald just the other one a Sapphire?
It's
Sapphire and Ruby.
Yeah, it's Emerald is kind of like what Leaf Green is to the original versions to Sapphire and Ruby. So like the way So this description is just a brief one. I won't read the whole thing, but Pokemon Emerald version combined the very best elements of Ruby, Sapphire, Fire Red, and Leaf Green to blah blah blah. Apparently it's the best one of the best selling ones. But the cool thing is, I was just reading through some of this stuff, after you beat the Elite Four, it unlocks what's called the Battle Frontier. And its description, an entire island populated by insanely powerful Pokemon trainers who would test your skills to the absolute limit. So like, it sounds like it's actually got a little bit of an end game rather than...
That would be cool.
Than just like, you beat the Final Four and it's done.
Well, so I can tell you what the end game for Sapphire is it's the Battle Tower, and you get a pass to the Battle Tower, and you go there,
and you can choose to go to an area. You can choose to fight at the level 50 and below or the level 100 and below.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick three Pokemon, and you go to a room, and a random trainer walks in, and you fight their three Pokemon at level 100, and you don't get any experience.
Gotcha.
And so I don't understand why I would do this.
It's just a...
But if I could, like... if I could explore and, like, fight high-level trainers and keep, like... I mean, like, if I was literally still... Like, I would do the Battle Tower if I was still leveling up my Pokemon. Because, like, my three Pokemon level, like, you know, 59, 50, and 55. Like, we defeated, I think, two of the level 100 Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're amazing. And if I could do that and, like, keep leveling up my team, I'd love to just keep grinding my team up to level 80, 90, 100. But there's no experience. And short of just... running the final four again over and over and over and over, there's no way to get experience at a reasonable rate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't have any desire to do that. But yeah, I'll check. I'll see if I have Emerald. I think I do. And I'll just start playing that then. I'll kind of kick Crystal to the wayside.
Yeah, and again, take that with a grain of salt. This is just me reading the description of the game. I've never actually played any of them. Any of this generation. So.
I don't know if I played Emerald or not. I know I played Sapphire. I basically always chose which ones I wanted to play based on what color I liked more.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I chose Diamond because I like Diamonds more than Pearls.
Yeah, that's
and cool. I chose Sapphire because I like Sapphires more than Rubies. That's the only reason I chose them. I don't have any desire for, like, to... I'm pretty sure I have beaten Ruby, though, because I'm pretty sure I've had the lava guy. I've had the ocean girl, ocean thing, and the lava thing. But yeah, I'll check out Emerald then if it's on there. And if it's not, I need to look at like how to get a hold of emulators and then put them on. Yeah, how to find like stable ROMs and then, I mean, putting them on should be pretty simple. Moving ROMs around is a lot easier than I thought it would be. It's literally just dragging and putting them in the right files.
Yeah.
But they're made very like accessible and user friendly, which is awesome.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of sucks, and I don't know if this would work or not, but like one of the core elements to Pokemon, at least with me, was battling other people. Like that's what we used to do. We had like me and Joe and Derek and a couple other guys that weren't kind of in our core group, but all like Pokemon and whatnot. Like we skipped, like we all skipped one of the dances in middle school. And just,
you don't play Pokemon?
Yeah, we just hung out in the art room and just played Pokemon. because we had Game Boys and Link cables.
Interestingly enough, I never had any friends, so that is not a detractment at all to me.
Well, it's not necessarily a detractor, but, like, it gives you, so, like, it's the end game. Like,
yeah,
Pokemon Red and Blue have an end game, and it's your buddy. And the game actually encourages that, because you can't get, and anybody listening knows this, but you can't get all 151 on Red or Blue alone. So you had to go get them all, trade with your friends, and then fight your friends. Like, that was the end game. So
yeah,
I can understand why it's like when you get to the end of the like you beat the final four and you're like, okay, now what?
Yeah, well, but for me, that every Pokemon game I've ever played, like the game is over.
It just ends there.
Yeah, which is fine. I had a lot of fun playing. I love playing them, but yeah, there is no end game grind to me. Like I'm just okay. We're done now. Cool.
Yep.
Wipe my hands and walk away.
We had our own like little meta going on, like. Because it'd be like, oh, what do you think? Because, like, we'd challenge each other, like, at lunch and shit. So yeah. It's like, well, I wonder Derek's rocking today. Because, like, I got my crew. Like,
I mean, like, competitive Pokemon's a very real thing. I don't know if, like, once in a while I'll see TikToks about it or YouTube videos. But it's a super real thing that people have. There are huge world championship Pokemon tournaments. And team composition and move choices and, like... what's the hidden abilities or whatever they have, like it's very very real. I saw a video recently, probably a couple months ago, but it was talking about how like I'm gonna make a year up, but like say it was like the 2018 Pokemon Olympics or whatever, what like the world finals, and like a dude showed up and kind of steamrolled everyone with this one Pokemon that no one ever used because it had this weird ability that interacted really well with this weird move, and it was just it steamrolled people, and just like a Magic tournament, like he found the chink in the meta and was able to take it all the way to the top.
Yep. And that's
so like, I mean, people get super duper into it. I watched a video today because my phone fucking listens to me and is now recommending Pokemon videos. It was about it was a run. It's a way to play Pokemon. Let me pull up the video and I'll get you the name real quick, because anyone who's ever cared about Pokemon stuff will recognize the name.
So while you're doing that, on the your phone listens to you thing, so I got a new van at work, and it's not a new van, it's just new to me, and it's newer than one I had. When I got it, I went to fill it up, and it turns out the vent tube for the gas tank was, like, obstructed. So, like, when you try to put gas in your tank, it just clicks off after, like, 2 or 3 seconds. So it took me, like, it was taking me about a gallon, a minute per gallon to put gas in my truck, right?
Jesus fuck.
I get it fixed. And this is all, like, I got it, it went in the next day and was fixed, and I picked it up. And the next day, I was getting TikToks about literally how gas tanks and vent tubes work.
Yep.
Never seen anything like it before on my fucking TikTok. Dude,
you know what's hilarious? I knew this was a thing that, like, when you hang out, like, your phones talk to each other, and part of that is, too. I watched one of those videos as well. And I was wondering, why am I... I mean, like, it was interesting, because I knew there was a system, but I never understood it, so it was kind of cool to see it. But yeah, I also watched that video of how vent tubes in gas cans and gas tanks work.
Yeah, it was so really creepy.
Yeah. For some reason, in my history, it's not showing me the video that I know that I watched. It was like a... Oh, here it is. Kaizo Ironmon. So it's a Kaizo Ironmon run. It is... So for perspective on how difficult this is, and I'll give you some of the rules, but this gentleman, who plays clearly on stream professionally, Pokemon... it took him 1,786 attempts to beat it. Some of the rules. You're not allowed to buy anything other than, like, repels and Pokeballs. You may only catch... Or you may only have one Pokemon that you ever use in fights. So you can catch a new Pokemon if you want, but then you must immediately disregard all other Pokemon you have. The only exception would be you can have them for, like cut, like, and strength. Like, you can have Pokemon for the moves, but... So you get to have one Pokemon. Obviously, there's permadeath, obviously. Everything's randomized also. So it's not like a regular Pokemon. Like, there are... It's very possible to get completely hard locked out. You are not allowed to use... You can't buy any moves or use any of them. So you can't give your Pokemon... Like, you can't, you know, teach your Pokemon, you know, Fire Stomp. If they don't learn it, you can't have it. And there's tons of modifiers that, like, jack up the difficulty. So, like, gym leaders will have 3 extra Pokemon each. The levels are all jacked up and crazy. If you go into a cave, caves are one-timers. You go into a cave, and when you leave it, you are done with that cave forever. You can never go back.
So you can't... You have to grind as much as you want, and then...
As much as you can.
Yeah, as much as you can. Because you run out of moves.
Because you also... You can run out of moves. Yeah. And so you have to be super careful. And, like, it's... I mean, again, this guy who, like... He fucking plays... Let's say he plays Pokemon professionally, essentially. It took him almost 2,000 attempts to do it. Now, a lot of those attempts... Just I watched the video of him talking about it. A lot of those attempts, they end right away, where you pick your Pokemon, which... So the starter Pokemon are randomized. There's rules that you can't pick an overpowered Pokemon. Like, there's some number. It's like base stat, whatever. There's a rating for how good a Pokemon is. You can't pick any Pokemon over 600, and you can't pick any legendary Pokemons. So if you get lucky and you have, like, a super awesome legendary as your starter, you can't pick him. And whatever is your starter options, you have to randomly pick one. So you can't even pick the best. So what he said is almost every run, and a good chunk of those runs, like, they end right away. Like, you load in, you pick your Pokemon, your rival picks his, and he beats you, and the run is over. You're done. So, like, again, for perspective on how difficult it is, one, I super credit to this guy. If anyone cares, it's Small Ant on YouTube for accomplishing this. But so I watched his 1,786th attempt, and when he got to the final four, because he had a voiceover going on, he informed me that up to this point, it was the 5th time he'd made it there. That's it. Out of 1,800 attempts, he made it to the final four 5 times. And this was the only time he got past, I think, the 3rd trainer in the final four. It was... kind of cool to watch him, like, min-max and, like, aggressively, like, play the odds and whatnot. I like, one of the things I didn't think about, you can't buy items. So the only healing items you are allowed to have and use are the ones that you find, which are randomly generated because of the mod.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't always a hyper potion here, always a full restore. You just have to get lucky and find healing items, and then you have to be super careful and use them, and you have to get super lucky on what Pokemon you get access to, because you have to catch it in the first day. I guess that might not be as true, because you have to catch it in the first area So, but if it's randomized, you can catch anything, I'm guessing. But you also can't, you can't catch a Rayquaza. You can't catch a Mewtwo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, there's also, like, as he was running through, there's several moves in the game that, like, there's a lot of it is luck. And he says at the beginning, the whole point of a Kaizo Ironmon is it's not supposed to be fair. It's not supposed to be balanced. And I guess, like, according to the person who made the challenge, it's not even supposed to be fun. It's just supposed to be hard. But, like, there's lots of moves in the game that, like reflect, or he lists a bunch of them off, but they'll basically one hit kill you. Like, if you attack the Pokemon and you don't one shot them, or if they get the move off first, you just die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if their speed beats yours, they hit reflect, you one hit kill them or almost one hit kill them, and then they'll kill you and your run's over. And like, hey, there goes the last 10 hours of your life. So I don't plan on doing that, but I still have like a Pokemon itch I want to scratch. I'll see if I have Emerald, and we'll see if that scratches it. And if I don't, or it doesn't, I'll look at trying some of these, like, more challenging versions of Pokemon to have a little more fun with. But that's literally been my life. I took a break from try-hard gaming, from multiplayer gaming, from giving a crap to other people, and was like, and just, like, just sitting on the couch with my wife back in 2005, holding B and running forward and...
Yep.
Use Fly!
That's the funny thing. Like, so... I think both of us have always just kind of assumed you wouldn't enjoy, like, the Final Fantasy series and whatnot. It's basically Pokemon. Like, the gameplay is very similar.
Yeah, but doesn't the but does the story matter?
I mean, it matters in the same way that it does in Pokemon. Like, they're more, okay. There's okay. more to well, it, but, like...
I mean, that's the criteria, then. Because, like, I mean, for perspective, I listened to, in the entirety of Sapphire... Now, I've played the game before... that helps a little bit in knowing kind of what to do. The game's also very on rails, which also is like you the story can't matter if the game's not on rails. Like they go together. Either the story matters or the game's on rails, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But like I didn't listen to any of the story in the I didn't listen to anyone talk. I didn't read anyone's Dexbox. I didn't because I don't care. I don't care anything about the story going on. I just like the gameplay loop of catching Pokemon, building a team, leveling them up, and I said making a strength build so at the end I can just start one-shotting shit.
Yeah, that's a lot of JRPGs, like in the same way that eventually you're going to hit a point where you're like, oh fuck, I should have listened to that guy because he was telling me he needed the thing. But like,
yes,
that I mean that's yeah, with the that's what JRPGs with the exception are
of, with the exception of the one or two times where I'll get fucked over by not reading, like I that isn't going to be a deal breaker. We're like, hey, you know, just so you know, like if you don't read literally anything, you'll get fucked once in this playthrough. But there's lots of games that, I mean, like if I'm not one, like an example I would think of is like I watched some playthroughs like Chrono Trigger, and like if you're not willing to go talk to everybody all the time, I don't think I'd have a very enjoyable experience with that.
Well, I mean, you say talk to everyone, but there's like five NPCs in a town, and it takes like 2 seconds to just click through their text box, and you'll realistically you'll almost always know whether you talk to the right guy or not, because like 9 times out of 10 they'll be like, it won't just be like, I am the shopkeeper, what would you like today, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they'll give you something or whatever.
They'll give you something, or like for example in the Final Fantasies, usually when you're moving through the field map, like it puts all your characters together, and when you talk to somebody important they all come out and like stand side by side, and that's kind mm-hmm. of your like your visual cue to be like, hey, this is something I should probably listen to. It's not just the NPC who moves in the same path going, man, I wish I didn't have to go to work today, and just you yeah. know what I mean.
Yeah,
so
maybe I might enjoy them. Speaking of all the NPCs come out and move in the same path, I'll tell you what, a mod I'd love, and I guarantee exists, I would love a move the fuck out of the way mod for these games. Because
yeah.
I'm trying to run through town and these fuckers keep walking in front of me, I want to stab them.
The most JRPGs, you can just move through people.
Yeah.
And they can't like yeah, physically not, block well, your way.
Not in Sapphire.
Yeah.
They body block the fuck out of you. And yeah, I'm trying to run through town.
It drives you nuts.
Dude, I had one today. I thought the game was punking me where like I was moving and like I came down, he stepped in front of me. I stepped to the left, he stepped to the left. I stepped to the right, he stepped to the right. I stepped to the right again, he stepped to the right again. And I put my game down. I was like, what the fuck are we doing here? What? Are we at Walmart trying to get milk? What is happening? I went around the block. I went back and went around the block. Before we get too much farther, and actually, as we're an hour in and the episode's kind of winding down, let's give a shout out to our patrons.
Yeah, speaking of NPCs, every week. Heyo.
Yeah, every week we always shout out our patrons. Thank you guys so much for being a part of the Patreon, for helping support the channel. A lot of that money lately has been going to helping build up this this battle box of pre-modern. I've been kind of pushing the money towards that, helping Matt get these decks going. Part of it's helping Matt recoup some of the costs because Matt legitimately just sunk all the money up front into it. So thank you all for helping me and Matt get to play pre-modern and enjoy it. People like Asphalt, Emperor, Ramblin' Rogue, Ashley, Eric, Monowolf, Ethan, CJ, Ted, Mumbledown, Rob M, Limit of Questions, Derek T, His Forest, and Jasper. Thank you guys very much. If you guys ever want to be a part of the Patreon, patreon.com/cantripcartel. We do record a Patreon episode every week, mostly. We probably record a Patreon episode 95% of the weeks, and that's usually anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes of extra content. You also get access to the Discord, where you can talk to me and Matt. We play games in there. We talk about all kinds of stuff. Several of the people in that Discord are still very active in the Magic community, and they'll go to various SCG Philly or Magic events, and you get to kind of backseat game and watch them and get their recaps and talk about deck choices and all kinds of fun stuff. So if that's something that interests you guys, by all means head over to that Patreon and we'll see you there. But to get back to the discussion, I really am having a hard time wanting to play other games after enjoying a single person game so much. Because I was thinking about today how I go through phases where I'll play Pokemon for a few hours and I'll get kind of burned out and it's like, well, you know, I'll put my game down and whatever, and I'll sit around, I'll get bored, watch a little TV, and I'm like, well, maybe I'll go play, hop my computer, maybe play Tarkov, maybe play Helldivers, and then I'll just pick my Game Boy back up, and I guess I'll just play Crystal some more, because I don't fucking want to. I did try to play Helldivers again the other day. It could be, now there's several problems I'm having with it, and one of them is probably a connectivity problem that's my fault, not theirs, but it happens multiple times that, I'll be in a raid with someone. I'll just do free play and just load in with someone random. It's fine. We're just killing bugs. And, I'll get two-thirds of the way through, and I'll lose connection to the server and get kicked back out to my own ship. So I just lose that 25 minutes of work. I've had it happen a couple times where when someone joins in on you, I guess I've been deemed not good enough, and I'll just get kicked. So, we'll get towards the end, and then I'll get kicked back to my ship, and I don't get any of the rewards. So, that's awesome.
Wait, what?
You could, if I'm playing and, you join my game as a rando, I can just kick you whenever I want.
Huh.
I think that's there to help prevent griefing.
Uh-huh.
The system makes sense. Because there's friendly fire. If you join in a random team, and you're just killing people for fun,
Yeah, obviously, that's not okay.
Kick them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also, but it's happened a couple times where, I guess I'm just not doing good enough, or I'm not following the objective hard enough, and I'll just get kicked out. Or what is also possible is their friend wants to play. And that's, I'm being over here being cynical. That's probably a significant part of it. It's their friend wants to hop on, and they need room in the group, so they kick me out. But, that's fun. And then that isn't break the game. It just makes it kind of hard to enjoy. But it happened, two or three games in a row. Or no, it happened two games, but multiple times in those two games where, me and the guy I was playing with, we just died to bullshit, nine times in a row. We were doing something, and all of a sudden, a thing exploded by me, and I died. So he summoned me in, I come in, I start shooting, and then a charger ran me over and knocked me down four times, and I died. And then he pulled me in, and then he died. So I called him in, and then something exploded and killed him. And then I called him in, and then he got ran over and died. And I was like, boy, this game is fucking fun. And that mission ended. I think we completed the mission, and I was like, well, Alt F4, I'm done with this for a while.
Yep.
It's fun to play with your friends. It's fun. It's more fun, but I don't know, man. For me, the novelty of running around and having 1,000 things chase you and how insane it is and crazy wore off, and there's just a bunch of annoying bullshit that I don't care to deal with.
Yeah, that's fair. To me, there are two categories of games. Actually, there's several categories of games that work like this, but the two big ones are like single player and MMOs. They're the like the two extremes basically. And when you get a good single player game, there's nothing like it. And when you get a good MMO, there's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of like games as service games now where like there's it's somewhere in between, like, you know, Helldivers isn't an MMO, but it's got some aspects of it. And but you're like you're still reliant on whether or not their servers work or your internet connection and the quality of the other people on your team, and they have to be balanced a certain way because like when you have multiple, like a lot of different people playing on the same game, like balance has to be done right because like you have to kind of catch it. So like a lot of time, for example, with an MMO, they have to balance the game like WoW, right? They have to balance WoW around the best players using the best strategies. So like you'll be like, well, why the fuck did my class get nerfed? And it's like, oh, because the best, you know, guild in the world figured out this broken combination with these two classes, so they had to take it away. And you're like, cool, that had nothing to do with what I was doing. Like, but you're just kind of like, you're kind of a victim of other people's success in that regard. So like there's just there's a lot of things that have to go right the more people you introduce to a game, which is one of the reasons why I like couch co-op so much, is you frequently don't have a lot of those problems, but you still get the the benefit of having a couple people who care about the same thing as you. So like you get that kind of like input where the game feels a little more real, because like I run into this a lot. So I'll play a single player game, like for example, at some point I'm going to want to move on from Unicorn Overlord, and what I'm going to want to do is chase that high on another single player game. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't happen. But I still go, man, that game was awesome. And it kind of reinvigorates my passion for single player games. Because after playing MMOs, like single player games, just they almost feel like pointless. Because there's no, like once you've played a game that has like years and years of investment into it, and it feels more like real life. Like, it feels like what I'm doing matters here. Obviously, it doesn't really, for the most part. But it really feels that way. And then you go play, like, a single-player game. For example, Pokemon. And you're like, oh, well, I beat it. I guess I'm done now.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, ugh.
I get the feeling of, like, you don't... You're not building towards anything. You're not working towards anything. So, like...
Yeah. It's just... It's, feeling. Like, very similar to just watching TV.
Like, for me, playing Tarkov is all about, like, just chasing that high of winning the fight, of, you know, being, getting the, like, I'm just chasing, like, that once every couple matches or once every couple weeks, I'll clutch a 3v1, and there's nothing feels cooler. And I'm just chasing that every single match, being like, man, this might be the match where I just pop off, and I just dome two people and then win the final fight and make it happen. Versus Pokemon, where it's like, oh, I died? Well, yes, I'll walk back over there and do it again.
Yeah. And then, like, the one of the reasons why I've had a hard time in general sticking with emulation is I feel that that kind of experience, I almost feel like, is even amplified on an emulator for me, where, like, I grew up with, like, physical cartridges and memory cards and whatnot. Like, I still have all my PlayStation 1 memory cards that still have the save files. So, like, if I wanted to, I could hop on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 and go skate in the skate park that I built in there, like, 20 fucking years ago.
That's pretty cool.
Like, most people doing emulation don't do that. Because they, like, they're, it's almost like, it's almost disposable. Because you're kind of there, like, for the most part, like, even with this handheld thing, like... You're going to be playing it at work and stuff like that. There's obviously exceptions, but...
I've got 2,000 games. You think I'm going to play Pokemon Sapphire for 200 hours?
Right, and that's what I mean. So, like, yeah, I get, like, the emulation aspect of it, it leads you to switching games more often. What happened with me a lot, and I'm a huge pro-emulation fan. I've done it a ton, and I'm not trying to ruin your... I'm not trying to yuck on your But, like, what happens to me is, like, the second I hit something that's frustrating and when I've got emulation going on, I pivot to another game. And, like, that's actually happened a lot on, like, that's why I don't... I've got, like, hundreds of games for Steam, and I do the same thing. Where, like, I just have so many options that as soon as something gets frustrating, I just go try to play something else, and then I end up playing nothing. Yeah. So, like...
I get that.
So
it doesn't hit me. It doesn't hit me as hard for sure. But like I get that idea.
Well, and it's also a little different when you're like laser focused on one game. So, like, currently, it's same thing. Again, Unicorn Overlord. Like, I've run into frustrating moments, but I'm like, this is the only game I give a shit about right now. Like, I don't care. Yeah. I'm going to beat this motherfucker because I'm, like, laser-focused on something. But eventually, I'll chill out, and then I'll end up, like, popping on my PlayStation and, like, scrolling through my dozens and dozens of games on that. And, like, I'll download one, play it for, like, an hour, get lost or something, and then I'm like, well, I guess I'll just go play something else.
Yeah.
That's like 80% of my gaming experience anymore.
Well, I mean, that's basically what's happened with me recently, like, as far as Helldivers. Like, Helldivers has had this thing where, like, I run into something frustrating twice in a one-hour period, and I'm like, I'm just done doing this. This is not worth my time.
Yep.
I have no desire to work past the frustrating part or to figure out how to beat this frustrating aspect. Like, this is frustrating. And I don't have to be doing this, so I leave.
Yeah, and that is something. So, like, you may have already heard of it. It's not a new concept. And it's something MMOs used a lot. But it's called the Skinner Box. And it's basically this guy named Skinner was able to figure out how he could manipulate rats better, right? And that's what they've used. That's one of the reasons why, like, randomized stuff is in all these games. Because they found that it's more addictive than just giving something somebody... It's more addictive to randomly give someone something than it is to give it to them whenever they want it. So,
is that tied to the principle of, like, if a slot machine wins every time, a rat will only push it when he's hungry?
Yes, that's literally what he does. Is the guy Skinner? It's just like you push the rat pushes this button, and every single time he'll get food. Well, he'll only push it when he's hungry.
Yep.
When it does it randomly, he'll literally just nonstop push it and push it as fast as he can.
He'll push it until he dies of starvation.
And that's kind of the same feeling I get when I play a lot of those games where, like when we were playing Apex and whatnot, it's like most of the time it sucks. And then you get spikes of dopamine. You get a rush. And that's what's keeping you going. Where it's just like...
That's exactly what keeps me going in Tarkov.
Yeah, arena. It's just a Skinner Box addiction. And I don't mean like... To some people, it is a very real addiction. But like... For most of the players, it's just like, it feels good when you do something really cool, but like 80% of your gameplay actually isn't very good.
Yeah. I'm just chasing those badass moments where I get to be like the main character.
Right. Whereas a single player game.
Tons of fun.
The experience has to be a lot better the whole time around. There's very few single player games that are built around Skinner Box style gameplay because it's just.
It is kind of funny that obviously that gameplay loop, like you talk about, is very addictive. I did find myself. Well, so here's, it doesn't transfer over to single player. I don't think that mentality transfers over to single player games, which is what you're saying, but here's my evidence to back it up. There's a lot of RNG in Pokemon, especially in the later parts of the game where, again, I play a strength build where I'm just attacking and whatnot, and the game, as it gets farther on, the game gets smart and it starts using like real legitimate tactics.
Mm-hmm.
But like I was playing against trainers and it's like all their Pokemon does is like cast confusion and sleep. And it's like, I found myself being like, cool, I'm glad I'm just playing RNG simulator as like, oh, he cast confusion. Cool. Does my Pokemon get to attack? Nope. Nope. Oh, I hit him for 3/4 of his health. Great. Do I get to attack? Nope. Cool. More RNG. I'd love RNG in my game. Thank you. Thank you, Drowsy, for putting me to sleep. Do I wake up yet? Nope. Do I wake up? Nope. Oh, I fainted. Cool. I guess I'll go roll the dice again and see if I can get lucky on RNG and defeat you.
Yeah, statuses are something that's just like JRPGs are notorious for, and they have their place.
I did break my rule while fighting the final four. I got a Gardevoir, and at level like 48 or 51 or whatever, she learned hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So I taught her hypnosis and just fucking rolled people with that because. I mean, like, I get it. It works where it's like, go, Gardevoir. You're faster than them. Cast hypnosis. They sleep for 4 turns. Beat them to death in their sleep.
Yep. Well, and those things are actually at least somewhat necessary in order, because that's how you counter the dudes who only go into damage, right? Because, like, if there weren't status effects or elemental effects, both of them, they're kind of twin sisters, so to speak. Then you just go for whatever does the most damage and who does it fastest. So
You mean the right way to play?
No, that's like, okay, is burn the right way to play in Magic because you hate it? It does the most damage the fastest, Jake. They're just playing control decks. That's so all they're doing.
That is, well, they are. That is different. That is a multiplayer game. I'm playing a single player game. Although, I guess if the games are like trying to be balanced for multiplayer at the end game, then that makes sense. That, I mean, the core design of the game, if they're doing it with end game in mind, which they probably are, because the point of playing Pokemon is playing with your friends afterwards, then that makes sense.
And but I'm gonna,
if I could, I would turn it all off for my single player.
Now, I know this isn't exactly what we're talking about because we're talking about single player games, but if we revert back to a couple weeks ago and we go back to that essay, we were discussing no scrubs. There are no tactics that are bad, Jake, remember? You just have to figure out how you overcome this stuff, and like those things are in the game for a reason.
But Matt, it's so cheap to just throw your Pokemon out and cast sleep every turn.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I think Alakazam was really popular in our meta. Obviously, mm-hmm. there was like, I think we had basically banned Mewtwo and Mew.
Makes sense.
Because they were just kind of OP. And like, we even recognized it back then, where it's just like, Mewtwo's just amazing. So.
Yeah. Well, like, he is a god, so.
So like, we just, the meta's just going to boil down to Mewtwo's versus Mewtwo's. And like, when do we bring them out? And like, so we got rid of that. But like, everybody else was on the table. And for the most part, like, other than Mew and Mewtwo, not that they don't have weaknesses, but they're very strong, like, the others have weaknesses. So even if you're using, like, some of the legendary birds, like Zapdos or whatever, right, they have counter. There's counterplay to that. In our meta, one of the best ones I had was, I just had a badass Dugtrio, and he'd just fucking wreck, like, a ton of dudes, because, like, nobody's running anything that can beat somebody, like, the ground or earth type Pokemon.
Isn't he flying in ground?
I don't remember exactly what it was. It was the mole, because it starts with...
I know Dugtrio can cast fly, so I know he's flying, yeah. Which is hilarious because he has no fucking wings, but I guarantee that Pokemon can cast fly.
Yeah, it's...
Or can use fly, I guess.
And I don't remember all the, like, the stuff. I mean, it was literally 25 years ago. So I was in middle school at the time, but, like...
Yeah,
that's the kind of shit where, like, we actually had a little bit of a rotating meta, and it made it a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
So we had that kind of counterplay where it's just like, you've got to have, like, you can't just build your Blastoise with the four best water moves. Like, he has to be a balanced Blastoise, or you're gonna get rolled.
I would much prefer to just hit, like, my strategy is every attack is super effective if you're a high enough level.
It's true, but.
As long as you're not fighting against people with equal levels.
Well,
as
I was going to say.
Fighting against the computer, and I get to be level 70, and they're level 53, and it turns out that Surf does plenty of damage against a fish if you're 25 levels higher than them.
It does. I've been there. It does a lot of damage against it. Surf is awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We were all just a bunch of nerds who just sat around grinding Pokemon whenever we got the chance. So, like, the odds that you were going to out-level me, pretty fucking slim back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, no one's going to show up. No one's going to show up 20 levels higher than everyone else. So,
yep.
It matters. Which is why, like, it's kind of why I want to try some of these, like, challenge modes where I want to, like, I don't know. I probably don't want to do, like, a permadeath one. Or I might, maybe I'll do a Nuzlocke and I just won't do permadeath. But, just like I want to play the game on the premise of, like, hey, like, move sets matter, strategy matters, play it like that.
Yep.
I might try it. We'll see. Well, I tell you what, Matt, this is a pretty good conversation. What do you say we carry it over into the Patreon episode?
Sure. Fine with me.
Because we're getting about an hour and 20 minutes long. So if that's the case, if you're cool with that, is there anything else you did want to talk about on the main episode this week before we sign off?
No, we can just pretty much kick the freeloaders out and, move on to the other stuff.
The listeners we care about, we'll get some extra for
both
them.
Of them. We love just you a two reminder, guys.
Just a reminder, next week we will have an episode, if everything goes to plan, but the week after will be our week off, so we're trying to keep a 3-week rotation going on. 3 episodes on, 1 episode off, and as such, we will see everyone next week.
Yep, have a nice night, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome, step on in to the Cantrip Cartel. Jake and Matt chatting meta games or slinging some spells, casting ales, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time, they're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the Wildwood prairies, where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queer and ranger scrounge the sylvan libraries, for when the greens and zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the birch lorian mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carpet of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands of sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaur stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel.